Hi, Erin.
Hi.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back.
Hey, welcome back. Welcome back.
So let's hear it for the girls.
We have a very interesting girl to talk about today.
We do. Before we get to that, I have to ask your opinion on something.
Yes.
How do you feel? Because you have a name that this is possible for you. Normally, this doesn't happen with most females in this world.
Okay.
But there's a small sect that this could happen to you.
Okay.
Could you date somebody with the same name as you?
Yes.
You could.
Absolutely.
Okay, because I have a date with somebody and they have the same name as me, and that freaks me out.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Like, could I date
an Erin?
An Erin. Totally.
Could you marry an Erin?
Totally.
I just don't know how I feel about that. Like, the same spelling, too?
I mean, that would be unusual in my situation because, I mean, if I dated a girl spelled E-R-I-N, but I mean, most guys are A-A-R-O-N.
Let me correct that. I guess for most cisgendered women.
True.
Hetero cisgendered women.
Right.
You don't typically, unless you have a very unisex age.
And it's, you know, it's not out of the realm of possibility that I would date a woman. I mean, obviously not now because she's.
Seth put a ring on it.
She has a ring on it.
Oh my
but,
gosh.
But no, it doesn't freak me out. What would freak me out is I don't think I could ever date somebody with like my dad's name.
Oh yeah.
Like Michael.
I have a
absolutely
professor.
Not.
I have to tell you the story and then we can get straight to it. I have a professor. I won't mention names. I'll tell you later though.
Thank God.
I have a professor. He's a very nice man. He's not the best professor in the world.
Cool.
He loves to talk about himself all the time.
I think I know who it is.
This man, and just to give you a little, and listen, I'm not one of those crazy like, oh my God, you have money, you're a terrible person. But one of his first comments to us was like, I drive a BMW, and if you do well in this class, maybe one day you can too.
That's
pretty
disgusting.
Much that was the gist.
Disgusting.
It was pretty much the gist was just like, I will teach you financial tips and maybe one day you can drive a BMW too. And I was like,
I'm sorry, that's just not that impressive to me.
Exactly. I'm like, most of these kids are just trying to buy a home and we all know that's barely a possible.
I could buy a BMW right now. I mean,
yeah,
I'd have to take a loan out,
yeah.
But I could get one.
He was like, I paid for it in cash. And
good
so we
for
were like,
you, man.
Anyway.
Ew,
so
that, I hate
was, that. That was the start. He's a good guy, though. I think sometimes he doesn't think what he says, but he's actually a decent guy.
All right.
But recently he was talking about his daughter.
Yes.
And who his daughter is marrying to. And like, I sit all the way in the back and I make the most meanest, I'm a mean person because he talks about his daughter and how his daughter married this guy who looks just like him. And I'm like, your daughter has daddy issues because the guy like looks like it could be him from like 20 years,
really?
20 or 30 years ago. Bad. Like, it's scary how bad. Like, he just came back from a trip and it was with him and his son-in-law and like they showed pictures and we were like, I was like,
is that your son?
Oh, God, that's not cool. And he's just bragging about it. I'm like,
I don't like that.
Most people would be like, that's an Oedipus syndrome. That's some Downing issues. And he was
super
just like,
super duper.
Yeah. It was weird. Anyway.
Yeah, but that's, I mean, yeah, I don't think I could ever like marry a Michael.
Yeah, I could see that.
You know what I mean?
I couldn't marry. I know.
So you're going on a date with someone. Do
his
they spell? Do they spell it the same way
no,
as you?
No, he does not
you,
spell the
yours
same
is more unique.
Mine's very unique.
Unique spelling.
His is very more traditional. Colin isn't like it's a common name, but it's not as common as like a Josh or Jacob or like a.
Yeah, it's
Josh,
not like a Brad, Chad,
David. Yeah,
Jake, Travis, Trevor, but it's not uncommon.
Yeah,
it's more British.
It's more a little bit more British.
Yes,
that was terrible.
That was so
speaking.
But for both. I knew you were going to fucking do that. I knew you were going to do it.
Terrible British accent.
I didn't think it was that bad.
We are coming back to movies, and we're talking about a film that recently came out.
This year,
and that film is Cruella.
Cruella.
Disney's Cruella came out in 2021, I think in May.
Yep.
Did you read the book?
There's a book?
There's a book.
Nope.
Okay.
Didn't read
the book. Did you watch the 1960-61 version of the film? It was an animated 1960.
Like 101 Dalmatians?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, of course I've seen that.
Okay. Did you watch the live action with Glenn Close?
Of course I watched that.
So I just want some reference points.
That's why it made me afraid of molasses after that one scene.
Oh, yeah.
I thought I was going to be suffocated
died
by a
molasses.
Vat of molasses.
Hilarious.
But of course I've seen 101 and 102 Dalmatians, obviously.
Perfect. Good. So we have a good... healthy.
We have an infrastructure here.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this film was directed by Craig Gillespie. Mm-hmm. This Craig has directed Lars and the Real Girl.
Love that film.
I thought you would have seen it.
Love, love, love.
Fright Night, interesting movie. Of course I've seen that.
Of course you have.
a movie I think we both have probably seen, I, Tonya.
Totally.
Great movie.
Great movie.
Was he nominated for that one?
I don't know if he was nominated as a director. I got a lot of buzz. But we have a cast. We have a cast member here in Cruella that was also in I, Tonya.
Yes. But that movie got a lot of buzz.
It did, and it was a good. It was a really, really good movie.
Screenplay by Dana Fox. Mm-hmm. Have you ever heard of any of their works?
I have not heard of any of their works.
You have.
Go for it.
What happened in Vegas?
Okay.
With Ashton Kutcher and Cameron Diaz.
Oh my God, yes. That is such a throwback.
Yeah, and she also did a Wedding Date with
Deborah Messing, mm-hmm, and Dermot Mulroney.
Yep.
God, he is so sexy.
How to Be Single with Rumor Phillips. Not Rumor Phillips.
Rumor Willis?
Rumor Willis.
You mean Rebel Wilson?
Rebel Wilson.
Demi Moore's daughter.
Demi Lovato's daughter.
Rebel Wilson. Didn't see that one.
Also, Isn't It Romantic, which also has
Rebel Wilson, yes, in it.
And then Tony McNamara.
McNamara.
Yum,
yum, yum. McNamara.
Who co-wrote it. Oh, my God. What's
Take
wrong
a breath.
Who co-wrote?
Yes.
One of our favorite films.
Uh-huh.
The Favorite.
I know.
So that's your screenplay, and then story, which I found interesting. There's a lot of people who are attached to the story of this film. So Elena McKenna.
How do you spell it?
A-L-I-N-E. Elena, I guess.
Elena. Is there an A at the end?
No.
Aline?
Oh, maybe that's right.
Aline? Maybe.
McKenna. 27 Dresses. I love that movie. I love that movie.
I love James Marsden because he's the hottest guy ever. And Cyclops is my favorite X-Men. And I will say, we should talk about Katherine Heigl as an opener to our next episode. Because I have since changed my tune a bit, actually.
There's so much to talk about.
Lot to talk about. But 27 Dresses, ultimately, I like that movie. It also has Ed Burns, which I also like. Go.
Annie, remake in 2000-something.
Did not see
with Denzel Washington. And then this
with Denzel Washington.
No, my God, Jamie Foxx. Oh, what was I doing? What am I doing?
I was like Denzel Washington.
And Annie.
They could offer him $1 billion, and he would say,
"It's
no
a hard knock life." he would play
oh
Annie for $1 billion. Are you kidding me?
I don't know that he would.
This is an important film. This is an important one that she's been a part of.
Okay.
She co-wrote, I believe, The Devil Wears Prada.
I love that movie.
Which makes a lot of sense when we discuss
it
this movie.
It does make a lot of sense now.
Kelly Marcel did 50 Shades of Grey.
Gross.
Venom.
Okay.
And then Venom, Let There Be Carnage, that just recently was released and was co-wrote with Tom Hardy.
I will never say a bad word about Tom Hardy. I love him so much. And he's so sexy.
He is so sexy. Those movies are trash. I might go see it tomorrow.
Who was Venom in Spider-Man 3? Topher Grace?
I think so. Yeah.
Rough.
And then Steve I'm going to screw this up. Is that Zissi? S-I-S-S-I-S. Zissi?
One more time.
Z-I-S-S-I-S.
Z-I-S-S-I-S. Zissi?
Steve Z.
That's a tough
one. This is
one.
His first writing credit. Or his
story credit. Congratulations, Steve.
And then producers, we have Andrew Gunn, who's done Bad Santa to Freaky Friday, Sky High.
I fucking love Freaky Friday.
And then Kristen Burr, who's done a lot of Disney movies, did Christopher Robin.
Oh, I liked that.
Dora the Explorer, City of Lost Gold, which was really good.
Was it?
Yes.
Missed it. Missed
Batgirl, which is coming out, I think, in 2022 on HBO.
Yep.
A movie called Milk, Mother I Like to Kill.
Ooh, shit.
Coming out in 2022.
Oh, wait. I have heard that.
Yeah. And then Mark Platt, who is the king of movies.
Well, it's Ben Platt's daddy.
Oh, that makes so much sense because it's like Aladdin, the Trial of the Chicago 7, Dear Evan Hansen, which I have so many feelings about that dumbass movie.
So, oh, he did Trial of the Chicago 7?
Yeah.
I did
La
like
La
that.
La La Land, Legally Blonde, The New Little Mermaid. So that makes so much sense.
So
that
that's part of the controversy is because they put so much makeup on Ben Platt because he does not look like a high schooler, but daddy is a producer.
He looks terrible.
Yeah.
He looks terrible.
Yeah, that's a lot of nepotism, which is not unusual in Hollywood. But
this movie was released as far as cinema release and then also direct to video release, direct to platform.
Was it in the cinema? It was because you saw it in the cinema.
I saw it in the cinema.
I watched it on HBO. Excuse me.
Disney Plus.
Disney Plus. Why do I always fucking do that?
This was released May 28, 2021.
Yes.
Runtime 134 minutes. So it's about 2 hours and some change.
So it's about 2 hours too long for you.
Yes. Budget was between 100 to 200 million. Currently grossed about $233.3 million.
Yeah, big time.
Do you want to do your favorite part, reception?
Yes, I do.
Okay. We'll start with the IMDb score out of 10. What do you think it was?
7.2.
Damn! 7.4.
That was my first thought.
Oh, shit.
And then I was like, wait, knock it down a little bit.
You were on the money.
Holy
okay.
shit.
Rotten Tomato score. Tomato meter score.
Tomato meter would probably be...
Hold on, stop it. Let me do this. 393 reviewers.
393?
Yes.
For Tomato meter.
Mm-hmm.
73.
Dude.
No.
You're on fire today.
Stop it.
74.
I'm never on fire.
You are good.
Holy shit.
Okay, let's see how good you are.
Okay.
Audience score.
81.
No, you're off. 97.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, this was...
I didn't want to go too big, but damn.
Well received.
I'm still happy with my scores.
Leading actress, we have Emma Stone, which I don't think this podcast needs to talk too much about.
I love her. Colin does not.
And then we have Emma Thompson.
A queen.
She has been in Saving Mr. Banks, Sense and Sensibility. Henry VIII was her first film. She was Nanny McPhee. She's well known in cinema.
She's on Pirate Radio.
Oh, yeah?
She makes an appearance there. That's the funniest fucking character I've ever seen.
She is a comedy gold.
But she was married to Kenneth Branagh.
I did not know that.
Who is a theater. He is a thespian.
Yeah.
Talking about Henry VIII. So is she.
So is she.
She's in Love, Actually.
Yeah.
That's the first thing I ever saw her in.
Most of her like beginning films were like Shakespearean like.
Yeah. Films. She's done some Jane Austen stuff.
Mm-hmm.
She's so good.
She's amazing.
She is truly amazing.
I only went with like top bills. Mark Strong, who we've known from like Zero Dark Thirty, The Imitation Game, Shazam. And then
if you like Mark Strong.
He's so good at Shazam. Are you kidding me? I love Shazam.
What's that one?
The Kingsman.
Yeah, that's not what I'm thinking of.
Oh, I love him in The Kingsman.
I'll think of it.
And then we have Joel Fry, who plays one of the henchmen.
Jasper.
He was in, the only film I really recognized him in was 10,000 BC, which was that like weird.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And then, I recognized him from Game of Thrones.
Oh, he was in Game of Thrones.
For like a whole season or two.
Shit, Colin.
I was just looking at that's films. What he I recognized him from.
He's in this new movie called In the Earth, which was released this year and it's supposed to be this horror movie, which I will go see.
I'm thinking of Sherlock Holmes with Robert Downey.
Oh, yeah, he was in Sherlock Holmes and he was amazing in that one.
He's always good.
He's always amazing.
He's a great actor.
I want to kind of do something interesting.
Do it.
Because we haven't had a film, correct me if I'm wrong, where we have such a huge wealth of like material as far as like a character.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Like this character has been in our zeitgeist in the media for.
Everybody knows who Cruella de Vil is.
For over, probably close to like 100 and something years.
Yeah.
And so you have this female character that we have not had an adaptation of this character in probably like 20, maybe close to 30 years. I mean, the last time was like the 2000s live action film. So that's 20.
That's 21 years.
Yeah. So it's been a long time since we've seen this character in film. We'll talk about it. So let's talk about the evolution. So there was a book released in 1940, 1950 called 101 Dalmatians. And it was pretty much, as you can guess, about a bunch of dogs and this crazy woman named Cruella de Vil and blah, blah, blah. As far as in
blah, blah, blah.
There's some details, but the bones were there. As far as film, we have the 1961 101 Dalmatians created by Disney. Cruella was voiced by Betty Lou Gerson. Mm-hmm. Did an amazing job. And then really honestly, when we first see her, she is this pampered heiress / designer, rude, spoiled, entitled.
Mm-hmm.
Has single, and like I think we need to really emphasize that. In the book, she gets married. The adaptation that Disney does, they make her a single woman.
They do.
She has no desire for children.
Absolutely
has
not.
No desire for family or friends.
Absolutely not.
And is her singular involved around fashion.
Yes.
Loves fashion, loves design. Gets to know Anita Darling, mm-hmm. Who is the kind of protagonist, mm-hmm. and owner of the poopies, because they are friends in school. I don't know if it's in college or in high school or mm-hmm. primary school or whatever,
right.
But they're childhood friends. Interesting enough, though, you would not know that, because if you look at this woman, you would think she was 60 something years old.
Right.
And Anita looks like a young 30 fresh year.
Right. Amy.
So they paint Cruella in the beginning as this maniacal, evil. I mean, she is rail thin. The coat is hanging off her body. She has this long ass cigarette. She's spewing green smoke all over the house.
Bitter.
Just disgusting.
Alone. Yes.
And just takes pride in her loneliness, which I think is something we need to put a pin on.
Okay.
You don't see a character who just takes pride in the fact that they're alone.
Right.
Interesting factoid. You ready for this?
Yes.
Cruella de Vil is named one of only three animated villains on the AFI's greatest villain list. Only three animated. The other one is the Evil Queen from Snow White, which...
Duh.
And the other one, this one I found really fascinating, was the man from The Fox and the Hound.
Okay.
So you have two women and one mysterious man.
Guy. Do you even see his face?
I don't think so.
God,
it's just called like the man.
Yeah.
So that's what our first introduction to Cruella de Vil is. This is like sharp, angular, disgusting, mean, bitter, single woman.
Yeah.
The live action one, which was released in 1996 and then in 2000, stars the incredible, the amazing Glenn Close.
Mm.
She's no longer an heiress. Now she is a businesswoman, which is very interesting.
It's like, yeah,
right?
Because
you're seeing this evolution of like, and we can talk about it here in a second, but like, I'll drop it right now. Cruella de Vil as a reflection of how we view single womanhood.
Damn straight.
Aging single womanhood.
Yes.
Played by Glenn Close. She's no longer an heiress. Like I said, she's a businesswoman. Still has no interest in family, love, or friends. She's all about the money. She's extremely ambitious, though.
Yes.
Whereas the first Cruella de Vil, like, you don't understand why she wants the dogs besides making a coat. This one you can understand because she's like, this is fashion, honey. Like, she is going crazy for these dogs because that coat is her next line. It's her next inspiration.
Right.
It's her muse. It's what's going to make her the latest or greatest. She's very selfish in a very interesting way. And she's afraid of like losing Anita in that film to marriage, not to like a competitor.
No,
it's like,
yes.
And I rewatched the first film again, and there's this line, and it made me go like, hold, Glenn Close, you are crazy, bitch. Because she says this, more women, the writers and Glenn Close, amazing. More good women have been lost to marriage than to war, famine, disease, and disaster. You have talent, darling. Don't squander it.
Wow, she sees that as the true threat. Like, men are the true threat.
Yeah, marriage.
Marriage is the true threat.
Marriage.
Yeah,
is the true threat.
Right.
And the director of the film talked about how they wanted to make her as evil as possible, no redeeming quality besides her human and charisma. And really, she loses. you know, her defeat in the first movie and the second movie is her loss of her success, her business. She has to literally give up all her financial wealth to damn dogs in the second movie.
Yeah.
Because that was a part of her penance. If she goes, like, in the second movie, like, they're like, okay, if you do this again, try to steal these dogs, you're going to lose all your money and you're going to have to donate it to all the dog shelters in London.
Right.
So, like, she loses her vanity, she loses her beauty, and she loses all her money. And that's her sacrifice. Or, you know what I mean, trying to obtain these dogs. So it's so interesting watching this film to see how we view, you know, womanhood. And then, like, my question to you is, like, what do you think of Cruella de Vil from that point? Like, if you were to reminisce on the animated and, like, the Glenn Close interpretation, how do you, as a woman, what do you think of Cruella de Vil?
I think that, I mean, it's really all the things that you said. I mean, it's not... I don't see her as having any redeeming qualities. I see her as sad.
Interesting.
I see her as sad because, well, and I see her as, well, evil too. But I guess, I mean, I feel like I am a compassionate person. So I always see people like that as sad. Even though, like, what she's doing is so abhorrent.
Yes.
So I have no sympathy for her, though. Even though I feel like she's a sad person, I have no sympathy for her.
Yeah, I wouldn't say I have any sympathy for her. And this could lead into, like, the last iteration, which is the new movie with Emma Stone taking the helm. I was obsessed with Cruella de Vil as a kid and still am.
Oh, my God.
I think she's so amazing.
I love that.
Like, she, to me, and if you talk to a lot of gay, queer individuals, they love Cruella de Vil.
Yeah.
Because she is just so wild. She's so crazy.
Oh, she is.
She's insane.
But then again.
I will add, she has this charming charisma. And, like, she, you don't see a mad woman often. And typically not a mad woman. When you see mad women, they're typically attached to a man. They're scorned. They're bitter because someone younger. But no, she's just like, I'm crazy.
Yeah.
I want the dogs. I want the coat. I don't give a damn about this man. There's no men in this video, in this movie, in the sense of, like, stopping her. It's literally just some damn dogs. And this woman's running around for dogs. There's no man that's telling her, no, what about my love? And what about our marriage? No, she just wants dogs. She wants fur. She wants fashion. And for me, I'm just like, God, that sounds amazing.
Well, yeah. So I get it in that sense of, like, if I rewatched the Glenn Close films, I would probably find some things to pick out. Because obviously I'm watching that as a child.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so, but... the painting a picture of ambition and doing literally anything to get it and people... mean nothing. Are you going to help me accomplish this goal? No, then bye.
Yeah.
Like, there's no, and once I'm through with you, then bye. Like, there's no sentiment anywhere.
No.
And so, but, like, thinking about, like, using dogs as fur for fashion is the most disgusting thing.
Yeah,
but, like,
absolutely.
But that's part of it, right? Like, it couldn't just be evil for evil's sake. It would have to be something that collectively as a society we would look at and be like, who the fuck would do that?
Right. And I think more importantly, I had a great conversation. Shout out again to Josh Pugh. I know I say his name every 3 seconds. We had a great conversation about Disney and their use of their media and even their theme parks and, like, marketing as propaganda. And I was like, what are you saying? And then I had to, like, take a quick second. I'm like, oh, no, he's really right. Because Disney is, I mean, even when their beginnings during World War II,
during the Great War,
they used their cartoons as propaganda and they haven't stopped that. And so for me, I see, you know, Cruella's intentions after going after these dogs as, like, a metaphor as single women and their threat to the family. You know, like, how do you see... how do we as a society see a single ambitious woman who does not want children, who does not want a marriage, who does not want a man,
doesn't fit the mold,
and they just want their own desires.
Yep.
And that is a threat to the family. Mm-hmm. And you saw
the nuclear family.
Yep, you see it a lot in the first one. I mean, it's almost like written. And then the second one, you see it in a way where they're trying to twist the narrative, but they're still going back. I mean, at the end, she gets, you know what I mean, put in a pit of molasses. And loses everything. So they're still saying, like, a family is important and the family is number one.
Right, right.
But for me, I think...
And without family, you have nothing.
You have nothing.
You have nothing.
Even monetary gain is nothing without at the service of the family.
Yeah.
And so for me, and I think that's why she's so important, is because, like, you would think that everyone would be like, oh, no one likes Cruella, but everybody loves Cruella de Vil. Mm-hmm. Because we're like, you know, we know this is bullshit. We know this is bullshit, and she's cool because of it.
Yeah.
She's amazing because of it. So you have this, like, societal love of this villain
right.
who has no background. We don't even know where this woman comes from. We know nothing from her. And then you have Disney going, like, okay, two things. One thing, we want to make money.
Yeah.
We have this new emergence of, like, this retelling of classic stories of villains. And so how can we, like, jump on this train to, like, sympathize these villains, these kind of bad people, especially with women? Mm-hmm. We can talk about, like, sympathizing with, like, the villain in a lot of films, and we'll mention some here in a bit. And we talked about one of them I really want to bring up to you. So then they introduce this film, Cruella, starring Emma Stone. So my first question to you is, like, what did you feel about this movie?
I really liked it.
Okay. Cool.
I did really like it. And it's because
Let me add, how did you like this film, and, like, how did you see this different than the past films?
I think that's hard to say. I don't know if I could answer that, because seeing that through the eyes of a child and not necessarily having any sort of, like, ability to see nuance for things like that. I mean, talking about it now, it makes a lot of sense, but it's been so long since I've seen those that I don't know that I could have a great answer for that. But I did like this film partially because I love a retelling.
Mm-hmm.
I love a new spin on an old story. But it's also a heist film.
That's very true.
And so I love heist films. Yeah. And so I love, I like good heist films.
Yeah.
And so it's not like I'm watching National Treasure over here. So
I love National Treasure.
I have seen half of it.
It's so good. Oh, okay. God. Anyway.
So it's that kind of stuff. It's not just a Disney movie. It's not a Disney princess movie. The quest is very unique, and it comes in the form of crime and heist, which I'm very into for film. So I liked it.
Do you see this as a female empowerment film?
Ooh. Do I see this as a female empowerment film? No. I don't.
So you don't see this as, like, a girl boss, girl power?
No.
Okay. Why is that?
Because it's saying that to be the person that you want to be, you have to act in this horribly shitty manner, which is not true. And I don't agree with that.
Oh, we did not watch the same movie. This is so cool.
I do not agree with that. I think, you know, because she, you know, when she says goodbye to Estella with the red hair, and she goes back to being Cruella, right? And Cruella's been locked in a box for so long. And then the people that have been with her from day one, from when she was an orphan, those Horace and Jasper, then she starts treating them like shit. You do not have to treat people like shit to get where you want to be.
But don't you feel like that was finally kind of resolved at the end?
It was resolved at the end, but look, it's a Disney movie, so it's necessary for the story. I do feel that way. But if we're looking at female empowerment in this film, and we're looking towards the Baroness, you don't treat people like that to get where you don't step on the backs of other people to get where you want to be. I don't believe in that. So, no.
Oh my God. This is not where I think.
Still liked it.
Not where I thought this movie was going.
Still liked the movie.
Oh my God.
But no.
Another question.
But
okay, keep going.
I do see the what we've been talking about with the single woman, the ambition, the need that so many men are revel in and are celebrated for and would do anything they can to meet their goal. And, like, people that are mad geniuses and blood, sweat, and tears, like, that is so for men. And when women, it's because they're crazy or because they're, lonely and because they're bitter, and, like, it's never good things. Right. And so I do see that concept of it, but overall, no, I do not feel it's a female empowerment film.
See, I thought it was very interesting. Because, like, there's a lot of debate about, not, I don't know about a lot of debate, but there's some good questions asked, like, how is this different than, because clearly, you know, I mean, there's lines in the movies where she's like, I am female, hear me roar.
Oh, totally, totally.
Like, I think the goal was a female.
Totally.
Okay, yeah, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I don't know, but I think they went down a different avenue that makes it a better female empowerment film because it's not a female empowerment film.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Because when I watch a lot, like, I've watched Charlie's Angels, a reboot. I've seen.
Oh, okay.
With Kristen Stewart. I saw sure, that one, which is sure. clearly girl power.
Love it.
And a lot of people were comparing that film to this one. This film got a lot of comparisons to Harley Quinn. Again, another classic female villain.
Oh, that's
villain.
Why you asked me that.
And all the Harley Quinn films, a classic female villain that they're trying to retell her still to be a right. protagonist.
Right.
And both of those films failed, whereas I felt this film was really good at. Where this film succeeds is that it broadens the concept of ambition and breaking norms in the sense of, like, Cruella is an individual who breaks, still to the fact that she is a single woman, she's breaking societal norms. And you can be successful, be weird, be different, break societal norms. You don't have to go with the flow. And the bareness yes. represents societal pressure right. of, like, conforming.
Yes.
Even though she wasn't, even though she, in a lot of ways, she breaks a lot of rules and,
right.
you know, tears them down. And maybe a real quick recap of the story. You have Estella, who is Cruella de Vil. Mm-hmm. You kind of see her from a very young girl. She's with a working mother. She is a rebel from the very start. She does not get along. Her love is fashion, and that's how she expresses herself. Her mother is trying to conform her to be.
But she's not a stringent mother. Like, she,
no, she's
she understands yes. her daughter.
She understands yeah. her daughter, but she also understands the world is going to be hard on you.
Absolutely.
So you have to learn how to play within the rules.
Yeah.
So you can see her going to school. She's a rule breaker. She turns her jacket inside out. She designs her own clothing. She's picked on relentlessly by the children.
She beats the shit out of some boys.
But she is a tough cookie. She knows she needs to fight right. back. But her mother can just see, like, this, my daughter is not going to fit in. So she takes her daughter and she goes to this gorgeous mansion where we don't really know what for. You can see her talking to this mysterious woman.
Mm-hmm.
It's at a costume party. The woman calls the dogs on her and kills Stella's mother. Mm-hmm. And from that point, Estella, as an orphan, goes somehow figures how to get to London, and she's on her own. And so the story is kind of this telling of this young woman with her ambition and talent trying to get into the fashion industry during the 1960s, 70s, which I thought was really important that they set it at a later time period, not something
I
more
agree.
Modern.
I agree.
And trying to kind of find her own pathway and really embracing the madness. I use air quotes because I don't think she was that mad in this movie. But embracing her genius and embracing her madness and breaking the rules. Eventually she gets hired on at the House of the Baroness, which is the Baroness is the top fashion designer in London at the time. Mm-hmm. She kind of works her way up from department store to this fashion house. And she just can see how she, even when she tries her hardest, she doesn't fit in. So it's, why join in and why try to fit in when you don't and just
right.
break the rules and bend them to your own will? And so you see this pathway right. of this young woman breaking the rules. I saw her understanding and realizing, like, you can't, like you said, you can't shit on the people who got you there.
Well, and so when it comes to the female empowerment portion, like being unapologetically you.
Yeah.
I think that's a great message. But and it's part of the character arc when she starts to treat people like she's been treated by the Baroness.
Yes.
And being shitty and thinking that that's going to get her ahead, which it won't.
Yes.
And it will just, you'll just end up like the person that's treating you like this in the first place.
Yeah.
That's part of the arc, right? But I would say, as far as like being unapologetically you, being outside the confines of society.
Yes.
You know, that's something to be celebrated, certainly.
Yeah, totally. What did you think about Emma's performance in this film?
You know what I think about it.
You thought it was good?
Yes.
Okay. I thought it was good too.
Oh, really?
I didn't think, I have some complaints, but I didn't think
well,
it was
of
bad.
Of course. I liked her in this film.
I really enjoyed that the directors, the writer, and Emma really centered her. You know what I mean? She was driving the car. She came up with the heist.
Yes.
She was getting, you know, she was
she's
sewing.
The one.
She was, it was her
right.
brain. It wasn't like she, the Harley Quinn film, if you haven't watched it, Harley Quinn or the Birds of Prey and Emancipation of Harley Quinn, it's a dumb film because everything is act upon her. Like, there's barely any scenes where she is actually like coming up with ideas. Everything is just dumb
happening
luck.
To her.
Yeah. So she's just running around.
She's not making it happen for herself.
Yeah. And she jumps and she happens to grab something in a perfect timing. And it's just it's just so stupid because,
that.
Like, girl, you have a brain. Use it. Like, the reason why she gets into trouble is because she's with a man, and the man tells her to go steal this diamond and do A, B, and C. And so she doesn't have the brains in her head to be like, I'm going to do this because this will get me to my point. Whereas in this movie, like, Cruella and the and Emma Stone's acting is always constantly like, uh-huh, I'm ahead of the game.
Mm-hmm.
I'm two steps ahead of everybody. And even if I'm not, I will figure out a way to be. And so she is, even in periods where she's kind of like drunk and she's mad and she's like, she's still in control. There's that beautiful scene where she's like drunk and in the department store.
Yeah, and she falls asleep in the window display.
And she makes this beautiful art.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Whereas in other films, it's just been like, she's drunk and she's messy and she's just like, she looks sad and lonely. No, she's like still creative and it actually propels her forward to her next spot.
And it's kind of showing that like, you have to like dare to be different, right?
Because
because she tried it the normal way, right? Like her friend Jasper gets her the job and she's literally scrubbing floors and she tries multiple times a day to get the manager's attention, and you know, if you need any help with seamstress stuff, like,
and
you know,
she tries the
normal way, right? And then that's just not working out, and so she dare to be different. Let's fucking do it. Like, I like that.
Yes,
I like that.
I also like that they made her much more complex. Like, she had friends, she had colleagues, that she wasn't this Cruella who was all alone, this one single genius. She had people who she worked with and collaborated with.
Yeah.
I mean, even Anita, to a certain point, her childhood friend, she worked with her to like, Anita was a journalist. And so Anita would come on the scene and have the tip and would take the pictures and write the stories about her making these big fashion exposés and fashion shows.
I love the garbage truck one.
Yeah, that was
good.
That
one's good.
And so it was interesting just to see that she was a much more complex person. I mean, she was vulnerable. There were periods where she was weak. There were some gorgeous scenes where the scene when she was on the Vespa and she's like crying, her makeup was running. She was easily corrupted by power, which I think is important.
That's important
to see, like, this woman isn't just infallible, but like people can manipulate her to do bad things.
Right.
Was she evil though? Because that's the hallmark of Cruella de Vil, that she's an evil woman. And I don't know. Do you think she was evil?
No, and here's why.
Okay.
So part of being evil in the previous films is like, think about, and this is trigger warning, animal abuse, but like, think about like literally looking at a dog, a domesticated animal, and being like, I want that coat for fashion. I'm going to basically get that done, right? I'm not even going to say it because it's so gross. So part of her redeeming quality is, in this film, is that she has a little buddy.
Yeah, she has a dog.
She has a dog who she loves
and adores,
has been there since day one. And so she's so mad at these Dalmatians because they've killed her mother, right?
Yeah.
But even when the part where she's like looking at the Dalmatians and Jasper like brings her a cup of tea and she's like, wouldn't they make a great coat? He's looking at her like, what the fuck? And she's like, I'm only joking, or I'm just kidding. And so like, because that doesn't play with audiences anymore.
No.
Because I, as a person that is so sensitive to something like that, would immediately be so turned off to the entire film.
Yeah.
Like if that, because I was a little worried, like when she meets the dog in the dumpster and I was like, what is she going to do to it? That was my first reaction because previously.
I mean, that's a part of her character.
That's part of the deal. And that's what makes her so unspeakably evil, is because she's doing something that, like I said earlier, societally is so wrong. It's so wrong.
I want to put a pin there.
Okay.
I will say I agree. She's not evil,
and partly because of that.
She's not evil because she can show emotion. She's
compassion.
Compassion.
Yes.
She's mischievous.
Totally.
She's rude and she can be cruel, and she's stubborn and childish.
She's not evil.
She's cold, but she's not an evil person.
Correct.
When we talk about the Baroness, though, that's an evil bitch.
That's an evil bitch.
I thought Emma Thompson stole the show.
She's phenomenal.
She was phenomenal.
She's phenomenal.
You know, this movie clearly, there's so many references. So when you think of Cruella, automatically you're touching on like artists like Vivienne Westwood, fashion designer Vivienne Westwood. Betsy Johnson is another example of that. Mugler, Gaultier, Patricia Fields, Pat McGrath. These are all kind of British.
When she turns her jacket inside out, when she's in primary school, I was like, if that's not Betsy Johnson, I don't know.
Yeah. She has these like that there's a period of time in the 1960s and 70s in fashion where women were just doing wild shit, especially Vivienne Westwood. Like almost all the looks had like Vivienne Westwood's like DNA all over it.
Yeah.
The Baroness von Hellman, who is this this famous fashion designer, and it's like the top tier. That is Anna Wintour. That is.
Nice.
That is Anna Wintour. That's nice. Miranda Priestly. We all know Devil Wears Prada, although based off of true stories, has heavy inspiration behind Cruella de Vil.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, behind 101 Dalmatians, Cruella de Vil. And so she just, like I said, she represents that societal norm. Like, she is the constant. Like, she is the one telling you yes or no as far as what will fly within the system. And I thought it was important that, I thought it was really interesting. Like, men were seen in this film, but they were never what stopped her.
Never.
No, never stopped Cruella. I mean, they might have held her back. They might have been cruel to her. But, like, they were also a part of the cog in the system.
Right, absolutely.
Whereas the Baroness was the puppet master. And she was pulling all the strings. So I thought it was really important that you never saw, like, men were her, in some sense, Cruella's compass as far as, like, conscience. They kept her grounded. They kept her rooted. They were like, hey, we're down for stealing, but this is too much for us too.
Right. They were the ones that balanced her.
Yeah.
Right.
And called her in.
So because absolute power corrupts absolutely. Absolutely. I completely believe that. And so, like, the point where the evilness comes for the Baroness is, like, when Stella spends so much time hand sewing those beads.
Yeah.
Onto that dress to make it the focal point for her spring collection.
Yes.
And, like, taking credit for someone else's, like, work, true work, true creative intellectual property, and shouting it, basically having everybody look at it and be like, look what I've done, when you've done nothing except for say yes or no, because you've gotten yourself to the point where everybody just goes with what you
which
say.
Which is so much a part of that creative process. Yeah. I mean, it's sad but true. And I love to have a fact, like, going back to that point, she looked so bored during the whole movie. Like, and not in a mean, like, her acting, she seemed just like, I'm so bored.
I'm over it.
Until she saw, like, Cruella's, like, talent.
Yes.
And those were the moments where she saw, I see genius.
I see genius.
And so I thought that was fantastic. But getting back to a point that you said, like, the cruelest thing, I mean, what made Cruella so evil in previous films and adaptations was her threat to kill a puppy.
Yeah.
And if we get back to this idea of, like, what is the metaphor behind Cruella de Vil? You know, a single woman's threat to the family. If Cruella represents a single woman, what do the dogs represent?
A baby.
And then you have, and spoiler alert, you have the Baroness literally getting rid of her children.
Yeah.
Getting rid of, and spoiler alert, Estella is, the Baroness's
daughter. Yeah.
And, like, literally getting rid of her, and to the point of, like, murdering her at the end.
Yeah.
And it's just, to me, I'm like, that is so wild that as a society, we can openly just pretty, I mean, like, it was just heavy handed. Like, they might as well just talk about abortion at that point.
Absolutely.
Because it was cool to see, like, we could have these conversations.
Right.
It also kind of made me kind of sad that the Baroness never got a deeper plot, that we still have to have a woman who's just evil. And that woman didn't get a backstory or narrative. Because she deserved a right to be told. Like, if she wasn't prepared to have a child, what's wrong with that?
Right.
You know what I mean? There's a scene where she's, like, literally giving her child away. And regardless of if you think it's evil or not, like, that was her choice. If her career meant more, then, like, what? The idea of propaganda just keeps on running through my mind. And I look at that scene and I'm like, gosh, you still, like, I felt it makes me uncomfortable because I'm like, yeah, I want evil women, but also, like, does it make a woman evil if she doesn't want to have a baby?
Right. And kind of back to that first line of, like, so many women have been lost to marriage.
Yes.
Because ultimately it's marriage equals man equals making a baby.
Yes.
Like, so men, I mean, it's the whole it takes two to tango argument. Like, because, like, this will lead to a child, right? Because is she going to say no to that? No, probably not if she's married. And so, I think that's really interesting. So when we talk about who's evil here, it's not Cruella. It's the Baroness.
Oh, yeah. Which is really interesting that, you know what I mean, in order to tell this villain's origin story, you have to make her, and we've done this, they do this.
You have to make a woman more evil than her.
Yeah. And the only way you can make her more evil than her is not killing dogs. It's like getting rid of a child, which to me, like, no offense, there are people who love animals. But for me, a human life, to say, like, I'm willing to, like, get rid of, like, that seems, you know what I mean? I don't know. I like, it's just like, it's weird, like, scale. It's just weird how the,
like, are you saying that that's worse than,
to some people that's worse,
right? And to some people it's the same.
Yeah. And right. It's just so bizarre, like,
I
how
see what
we
you're saying.
How we have jumped I these metaphors saying. And we get to this movie and we're just like, pull off the metaphor, we're just gonna talk about it. I'm like, no, wait, there's
whoa,
still
whoa,
some
whoa,
things
whoa.
There's some things we still need to talk about before
yeah.
we get there.
Yeah.
I think what my question to you is, like, what made this movie so successful?
The name recognition in and of itself is an important detail. Everybody knows who this is,
yeah.
right? Like, I think it would be, well, what's a good example? Like, if we're making a film about another, you know, Disney villain, like, is it the same? Because we don't know it as well.
And Maleficent.
Right?
It wasn't Disney, but you can talk about Snow White and the Seven Huntsmen, which
yeah.
I thought we'll talk about in a second. but I think, yes, as far as property, besides Maleficent, I think this might be older than Maleficent, but this is way more well-known.
Exactly. And so I think partially that is something that it's like, oh, people get excited for it, Matt, because yeah. Everybody loves to be familiar with that, right?
Yeah.
With something that they're going to watch. And so I think that's a big part of it. Obviously, you have some top-notch
names,
you know, names in here. Both on screen and behind the screen.
Yeah.
You have some top-notch names, especially because you have a Disney film, but then you also have Tony McNamara that did The Favorite, which is a film. That yeah. is a drama film, and yeah. it's a dark comedy. That's remains probably one of our favorite episodes that we've ever done. And so you have some real talent there too.
Well, I think I'm glad they did, because they treated it as like a period piece.
Absolutely.
This was definitely set.
Which was such a benefit.
It was such a benefit to
yes.
it. I love the fact that this wasn't a zero sum game in the sense of, like, I alluded to the Charlie's Angel film. Watching that movie, I felt so bad for the men in that movie. And not like, listen, I don't always like men. I'm a man. I think men are trash sometimes. But God, like, why does every girl boss movie just have to, like, shit on men? Like,
yeah,
sometimes
yeah.
men deserve it, but like, this
a lot of the times.
A lot of the times, but also, like, there's, number one, good men out there. Number two, like, women still work and live and socialize with men.
Coexist. You know what I
mean? Yeah, coexist. Men can also help make women great and put women in positions of power. And so, like, I love the fact that, like, there wasn't the zero sum game. That, like, the villain wasn't this man who wasn't trying to oppress her.
Oh, yeah, I see.
But it was
saying.
Just, like, a system that was trying to keep her down. And that we all, like, underdeserved work, underpaid workers, people whose talents are stolen, artisans, you know, marginalized people
yeah.
were seen in this film and recognized in this film, and they were all oppressed by this larger system.
Right.
Even the woman who was the villain, in certain terms, was oppressed by this concept of, like,
yeah.
the only way I can be successful is giving up my child and 100% dedicating myself to my art.
Right.
So I love the fact that it wasn't this zero-sum game of, like, men are bad, women are great. Like, no, there's shades and, you know what I mean, tons of gray area for every character
right.
in this film.
I will say, to your point about the Charlie's Angels things, because I have not actually seen that yet. But I will say, when it comes to, like, yeah, there are men behind women that can, like, help make them great. But so often a success of a woman comes down to if a man wants to do that or not.
Yes.
And so with these boss bitch, boss babe type of films, I think sometimes, while it's not always right, it sometimes feels like, I'm making this choice for myself before a man can make it for me, because more often than not, I've
yes.
been burned by the fact that, well, I'm just not in the mood, or I don't want to, or,
yes.
you know, it's because the success is dependent on men.
Yes. And this film,
right.
success was solely
on her
talent.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And everyone has had to work their fingers to the bone. Everyone has been underappreciated, underdeserved.
Right.
And everyone has talent. Well,
right.
I don't know about everyone, but we can assume everyone has talent. So I feel like, even as a cisgender man, I looked at that film and I was like, I can recognize with Cruella.
Totally. It was relatable. And I'm so back to it being a period piece. It would not have worked if this was modern day. It would not have worked at all because it's too... It would be too on the nose, I think, for a lot
yes.
of people, if you know what I'm saying.
Yes.
So I think it really worked. But you're right. Like, it's a relatable character.
Yes.
Because another thing, too, is that being a man and identifying with this, you have an industry that is so with, you know, fashion. And although there's so many male fashion designers, and because there's so many houses of fashion that are led by men, mm-hmm. it's still seen from a societal standpoint as a woman thing.
Yes.
That is a girl thing. Yes. Fashion is for girls,
yes.
girls and gays. And so, like, you know, but to see these qualities that are not inherently feminine, quote unquote.
Yes.
Like, it gives an opportunity for more of a broader audience to relate with this character.
And, like, let's be honest, we love a fashion film.
We love a fashion film.
I mean, everyone loves a fashion film.
Look what the fuck I'm wearing. Am I fashionable? No. Do I love a fashion film? Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Absolutely.
So, what about this film do you feel like? Okay, I'm just going to say, I'll tell you things I don't think worked in this film.
Can I guess what one of them is?
Yes.
The accent.
God damn it. That accent was trash.
I didn't think it was.
It was really bad, and I'll tell you why.
You hate accents of any kind.
You know, but this one I have some.
Okay, do it. Fine.
Validity.
I'll hear it.
Stone's accent.
Okay.
I read I think it was The Verge.
Okay.
Or Vulture, and the writer of this article said Stone sounds like what an alien who only ever saw an American actor play a British character would think a British person sounded like.
That's pretty harsh.
And that's pretty accurate. She chose a mid-Atlantic accent.
Okay.
Which, do you know what that is?
Nope.
Okay, so during when they finally started making, like, in the 1920s, 30s.
Yeah.
When silent films started shifting out and we had talking films.
Sure, sure.
They created an accent that, and you know the accent.
I do.
They created an accent that kind of bridged the gap, because it was really hard for us to understand a British accent, but an American accent was just cockamamie and it didn't make any
sense.
Yeah. So they made this, and you know it. I mean, what's her name? She's a famous actress. She dated Hughes, the pilot.
Katharine Hepburn?
Katharine Hepburn had the accent down. That, hello, how's it going? My name is Katharine Hepburn. It's like British but American kind of.
Very formal.
Very formal, but right. Very dramatic. Kind of sounds Shakespearean, but very kind of New Yorkish.
Yeah.
She took that accent. I'm like, why would you do that?
Because she didn't want to sound like she's from London.
She sounded dumb. She sounded dumb compared to everybody else. She sounded really dumb.
Name one film where somebody did an accent correctly. That you didn't hate.
I didn't hate Glenn Close's accent in whatchamacallit.
Okay.
I didn't hate it.
I accept that.
Cruella de Vil. And it was appropriate. Cruella de Vil that's the other thing that I did not like about this film. I thought she did a good job. I thought she could have done a better job. Emma Stone could have done a better job, and I'll tell you why.
Please. I thought
she has no sense of power. When she acts, she's really good at being goofy. She's really being demure. She's really being good at clever and kind of and quirky. She has no authority. And my thing is, there were some scenes, especially with the reveal, that she just seemed like almost like she's second guessing. And some, like, there were small things like the twist of the wrist that she would do. I'm like, this is fucking Cruella de Vil, one of the biggest gay queer icons as far as villain. She need, I mean, besides Ursula, like, the reason why we love Cruella and Ursula is because they're these campy, over dramatic, they are acting in it, like the character is acting. Everything is an emotion. You know what I mean? And I just did not see that from her performance.
I agree with you.
Thank you. I know.
Because there, and I like Emma Stone a lot. I do. I do agree with the authority. I have to say, I do agree with that, because it feels like there's moments where she's waiting for permission.
Yes. Whereas Emma Thompson
does not wait.
No.
Waits
there was that
no
scene
one.
When she was like tasing somebody, and that shit was fucking hilarious, because like her face was so stern and she was just like,
when she finishes her lunch in the car and throws it out
with
the fork and the lid napkin,
just like, and throws just, it like,
she's just like,
this is an everyday occurrence for me.
Right.
That was the balance.
Not a care in the damn world. No. Yeah.
I heard there was a lot of complaints about the soundtrack.
It was, well, that it didn't match the time.
That, and there was like too many goddamn like popular songs.
There were too many bops.
Like,
in there.
You were like literally like,
hey, I know this one.
Yeah, every
it's
other
a new
song.
Dawn, it's a new day. Yes. Yeah. It didn't match the period piece of it. It could have worked if perhaps they did covers. in a more period style.
Yeah.
That could have worked. But it's like, does that make it more popular? Does that make it more watchable? I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, there were too many hits on there for sure.
The ending.
Yeah.
Her parasailing.
Didn't love it.
That was terrible.
That felt modern. That felt like it's James Bond and it's a very calculated move and I'm
so
Daniel Craig jumping off a cliff.
So
like,
dumb.
Didn't love it. Didn't love it.
I think my last point, and then I think we'll wrap up, is where does this kind of lead us as far as the next film? Because clearly there's going to be...
Certainly a sequel.
There's going to be a sequel.
No doubt about it.
My issue is that they have set this character. If we just take out Emma Thompson.
Okay.
Emma Thompson said she would love to do, and you will love this. I don't know if you heard of this. They would love to do a second film, both Stone and Thompson. But they want to do in the style of, are you ready for this? The Godfather Part 2.
I read that.
I don't know what that means.
You don't know what that means?
Yeah. What does that mean?
I don't actually know.
Okay. Is that like a...
People say their favorite Godfather is the second one.
Well, that makes sense.
That's all I know.
Stone has definitely signed to reprise her role. Some of my issues is like she's not evil yet. Right. And I get it. A second film might make her more evil. And then by the third film, she's fully realized. Clearly, it's going to be a trilogy. So there's still time to get her evil. Then another issue that I have is that it restarted the franchise. Like this is not, we're not going to continue on to the past films we have. This is a total retelling of the narrative.
Mm-hmm.
My bigger issue is it's not going to touch on themes that were super important to who Cruella de Vil is. Mm-hmm. So this concept of like aging, sexism, like because they made it so broad, can we touch on these more complicated films?
Can we narrow it down?
Yeah, and I think the important thing is, and like this movie got compared to the last movie, and you watched it, and I asked you about it. This movie got compared a lot to The Joker. And The Joker, for a lot of men, was a cultural reset. It was a big film for a lot of straight cis men. And
I liked it for
good reasons.
I liked it.
Talked about mental illness.
In a big way.
In a big way, in a hard way.
Very hard way.
And I get it. This is a Disney film. It's not going to be able to do that. And we really can't do anything. But I don't think this film will ever touch on important subjects.
No,
has the character to do it.
Yes. It's because that's not watchable.
Yeah, that's fair.
And
but the question is, will they ever make her, can they ever get Cruella de Vil to the point where she'll kill a puppy?
No.
And that's
absolutely not. Not in this day and age. That is unwatchable. That is not for a broad audience.
But see, they did it in the Once Upon a Time TV series.
Yeah. But no, they won't do that.
You don't think they'll do it?
No, they won't. And I wouldn't watch it. Someone like me, because that's so upsetting to me, like snaps me back to reality so much. And then I think like, no, why would I watch this?
Right.
Yeah. But like, do we need her to be evil? After she kind of comes around in her arc, you know, gets back together with the gang, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like, what's next? What is she going to do? Start her own label.
Start her own fashion house.
Okay.
But I think the goal is this, like, yeah. Like, we got to get
it. Why?
But, like, okay, again, I'll go back to the Joker. The Joker, I felt bad for the guy throughout that whole movie.
Right.
And then at the end, he fulfilled his purpose.
Yeah.
His purpose was fulfilled. Like, you could take the end of The Joker and you can make a Batman movie out of that.
Oh, hell yeah, you could.
And so the question is like, shouldn't Disney, as a mega mogul, it's gonna produce some more 101 Dalmatian films. And I think they got to get Cruella to the point where she would be willing to kill a puppy.
But they're not. They won't.
I think they will.
I don't think they will.
I think they will.
Not on Disney. Not on Disney.
It's got to be something. It's got to be something.
Not on
Disney. Because even Maleficent still has... She still is seen as evil. So, like...
Well, certainly, but what else could Cruella do that is evil? Because here's the thing about The Joker, right? God, that film was so good. Was he able to be saved? Was
no.
the damage too... Was he
oh, the
too
damage
far
is
gone?
Done.
Can we say that about Cruella at the end of the film? No. she's not too far
no,
gone.
No, but like that's what I'm saying. Like, where is that the goal? Is to take her to...
I wish it wasn't. I don't think they'll get her to... She won't kill a puppy. No.
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
I think they will.
I don't think so. You want to bet on it? Are you a betting man?
I'm not. I'm a Christian woman.
Oh my God.
I did enjoy this movie. Watching the second
time.
I'm really
glad.
I thought it was entertaining.
It was.
I don't think it was a great movie.
I thought it was good.
But for the audience, I thought it was a good movie. It was very entertaining.
I agree with IMDb.
Yeah. That a good pacing.
And a tomato meter.
Yep. It could definitely have been edited
good
down.
Good pacing. Well, that is the key. That is a key necessary point for any heist film.
Yes.
The pacing is incredibly important.
Yes. Yeah. Good pacing. I love the camera work.
I liked the camera work too. Yeah.
I thought fashion wise, I thought Cruella's fashion could be better. Emma Thompson looked insane.
Amazing.
There were some dresses where I'm like, that doesn't even look like it fits her. But
I didn't love the red dress on her.
I didn't either. That was the dress.
I didn't like it.
That was the dress where I was like, nah.
I didn't like it.
But overall, I thought it was actually a decent movie.
I did too. I liked it.
Wow. Look at us connecting. Well, I would say we know what movie we're going to talk about next.
Of course we don't.
But we don't. So
it'll be a surprise to you just like it is to us.
Surprise. But thank you for listening.
Yes, thank
as
you.
We said in the previous episode,
This is the 23rd episode we've done. 23rd episode and the third to last episode.
Yeah, we're wrapping
them down.
We have
two more in the works.
So please listen in. And thank you again for supporting us through this fun journey.
It's been a fucking blast.
So have a great week, everybody.
Thanks, Speak Boise.
Bye.
Bye. Hi, this is Erin.
And this is Colin.
And you've been listening to
Let's Hear It for the Girls.
It's always a great time at Speak Studios in Boise, Idaho, and we hope you enjoyed learning about the girls.
Now listen, you better like, subscribe, and review us on all major platforms. We'll see you next time.
And thanks for listening. Thank you.